Marks, open with me to 1 Timothy chapter 6, please. 1 Timothy chapter 6. It's so good to be back with you this Lord's Day morning. Jessica and I had a good week, all things considering. She got sick on Tuesday and had a stomach bug and was out the rest of the week. And rough week for her, but you know, in the light of that, we were with about 222 campers and about 50 staff members. And it truly shows you the love of Christ during those times. I mean, people of the world don't care a hill of beans about you. And just to see the love that Christ pours out through His people is amazing. It was a good week for me. It was a week where I wept with those who wept and rejoiced with those who rejoiced. In an exhausting week, I came back so tired. But it was an encouraging week in many ways, and we're good, glad to be back with you. Last week at camp, we talked about the book of Ruth, and today I would like to provide a couple of different lessons from the book of Ruth. This evening, what I want to do is I want to just go through the book of Ruth. Just tell the story of the book of Ruth. Ruth is written in narrative style, and I want to just go through and see what the story of Ruth is. It's a story I knew, but I learned a lot about just spending an entire week just thinking about Ruth. This morning, I'd like to draw a lesson from Ruth and talk about contentment. Contentment. As you go throughout the book of Ruth, I would argue that the theme of the book of Ruth is being filled. It's being filled with God. And what I want to do this morning is I want to try to take this idea of being filled and look at it in the context of contentment. So I want to do this morning is I want to understand how to be content. What we're going to see this evening is Ruth and Naomi were seeking being full. They were seeking that fill that they can only find in God. What I want to do this morning is, for us, I want to look in the New Testament and try to understand, how do we be filled? How do we be content? So what we're going to do is we're going to overview the text in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and then we're going to look at the examples of the craving, where they're going to examine the content, and then we're going to contrast these two type people to see which one we are and which one we should be. So let's go ahead and get into the text together. The context of 1 Timothy, before we get into it, is it all about instructions to a young evangelist. The context and theme of the book is best given in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 14. I hope to come to you soon, but I'm writing these things to you, so that if I delay, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and buttress of the truth. So the book of 1 Timothy is written to a young evangelist who provides then instructions to the church that he's working with. So let's go ahead and look at the text. 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning in verse 3. 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning in verse 3. If anyone teaches a different doctrine and does not agree with the sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching that accords with godliness, he is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and despised of the truth, imagining that godliness is a means of gain. But godliness with contentment is a great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmless desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with many pangs. So you'll notice essentially what Paul does in this section is he warns Timothy of two different types of evangelists and ultimately then two different types of people. There are the people that he describes in verses 3 through 5 who are those who are craving. And he contrasts this in verse 6 through 8 with the content. And then goes back and finishes in verse 9 through 10 by talking about those who crave. And this text, while applied to a church in the first century, and especially evangelists in the first century, I think has immense implications for us as we try to understand what it takes to be content. So let's get into the text in a bit more depth, and let's look at the craving. So let's go back through these verses together, beginning in verse 3. If anyone teaches a different doctrine and does not agree with the sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching that accords with godliness, he is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and deprived of the truth, imagining that godliness is a means of gain. Verse 9. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a desire, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with many pangs. Boy, doesn't this sound like the type of person you just want to invite to a party. I mean, when you look at the description that Paul gives of these people, these are the people who just can never be happy. I mean, do y'all have anyone in your family or any friends that they just cannot be happy unless everyone else around them is miserable? There's one member of my family who the only way this individual's happy is if everyone else is focused on some conflict involving this person, and we're all just mad at each other, and then secretly this person's in the corner just really glad that we're all secretly mad at each other. These type people are miserable to be around. But unfortunately, the world's full of them. I mean, the world is just full of people who just crave and are never content, are never happy, but are always wanting. And so let's look at the list. What all do these people crave? Ultimately, these people crave controversy. They crave friction among people. They crave money. And when you look at the desires of these people, it is all about self. And brethren, as Christians, we know that the greatest enemy of the spiritual self is the fleshly self. And these are people who desire the flesh, who long for this world, who crave the things of this world. You know, let's talk about craving. Is there anything that you just crave? Up when we lived in Indiana, trying to find good sweet tea was an utter nightmare. Chick-fil-A was the only one that I could tolerate. And theirs even at some times was just muddy water. McAllister's at times, if they made it right, was okay. But there were times I just craved a good glass of sweet tea. And I could make it myself. But you know, just, you know, on a whim, just stopping on my way home after a long day and just getting a good, nice, cool glass of sweet tea. Oh, I would crave it at times. And whenever you're in a desert of sweet tea, all they have is mud water up there. You just crave it. I mean, you just absolutely crave it. You know, there's a few foods that I just crave every once in a while. Up in Lafayette, we didn't have a Longhorn. And if you've ever had a steak from Longhorn, get a medium rare steak from Longhorn. Oh, buddy, y'all, it is good, good, good. And I just couldn't find a good steak up there. I mean, I could make one at home that's pretty good, but I could not find a good steak. And there would be times I would just crave a good medium rare steak. Oh, I know that's the way you like it, isn't it, Mike? Good, medium, rare. You know, you just crave it. The belly is never satisfied. And if there's any part of the body that just frustrates me, it's the stomach. You know, whenever you eat, you're always wanting more, right? You're always craving more. You're not going to eat once and be satisfied the rest of your life. You always crave more, and that's the nature of the stomach. There's no other part of the body that we have to feed three times a day. We have to constantly be feeding the stomach. And he uses this idea of a craving and applies it to people who just constantly crave and are never satisfied. Because these are people who are not satisfied with the sound teaching of Jesus, but they have an unhealthy craving for controversy, for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and deprived of the truth. I mean, just miserable people. And brethren, I think if we're honest with ourselves, this describes me too often than I want to admit. You know, I'm just never satisfied. Just never satisfied. I always have to have more. I always have to crave more. I mean, you just look at the nature of our society. I'm going to venture to say that 90% of us have one of these in our pockets or in our purses. And if you take most of us, we are not satisfied with a cheap little $50 Amazon Blue. We want the iPhone 7. And then when the iPhone 7S comes out, you better bet that there's going to be half of our society that they're Best Buy or the AT&T store on that very next morning getting that new one. And then when that new one comes out that has a bit better of a camera and then has the 4G LTE, then you're definitely going to want it. And then whenever that one is old, then you're definitely going to want the new one after that. And then whenever this one becomes new, you know, you just throw it to the side. And then you want the new one after that. And then when that new one comes out, you definitely want the new one. And then we've not even talked about televisions. I mean, you talk about televisions. Y'all remember when that flat screen came out a long time ago, and now you have, you know, the plasma screens, and now you have the, I don't know, the neuron, I have no idea what they're even at now. I mean, just constantly craving more. That's what our society has taught, to never be satisfied, to constantly crave. And if you look at the cravings of these people, and then you see what they detest the sound words of Jesus and the teachings of godliness. I mean, these are people who, in verse 3, don't follow the teachings of Jesus, but rather they detest the sound words and the teachings of Jesus. What then is their problem? I mean, I think we would all recognize we don't want to be like this. This is just a miserable person who's never satisfied, is never content, is never happy. What's their problem? Well, if we look at chapter 6, verse 17, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, and be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good fortune for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is true life. Is money the problem? No. I mean, Paul, just a few verses later, says, as for the rich in this present age, the problem isn't having wealth. And I'm afraid too often that that's what we make the enemy. The problem is not the materials, but the problem is the attitude that we have with them. This is a little bit of a phrase, but it says in verse 5 what I think is their true problem. These are people that imagine that godliness is a means of great gain. What does he mean here? Godliness is a means of great gain? Ultimately, I think what he's referring to here is false teachers who think they can get paid for their teaching. Because he says in verse 9, those who desire to be rich fall into temptation. Verse 10, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Brethren, this verse was first written to evangelists. And this is a verse that I take very, very seriously. Because there are many evangelists who fall into sin, and many evangelists who fall into wickedness because of the love of money. And the true problem that he teaches here is, these are people that imagine godliness is a means of gain. Now you'll notice my chart up here. Let me explain what I mean. These are people who are worldly and they use godliness for gain. Now I think we're going to try to adapt this and see how it should look in a little bit, but let's just understand what these people are like. These are people who imagine that they can use godliness to get to gain. Again, does that sound anything like contemporary America? Of course it does. I mean, unfortunately, there are still, and perhaps even more so today, evangelists who use the gospel to get themselves rich. And within the context of evangelists, he's saying, do not use the holy gospel of God, do not use the sound words of Jesus, do not use the teachings of the gospel to get rich. But this is what the people were doing. Because these evangelists were never happy, they never had enough money, they were never satisfied, they were never content. They imagined that godliness was a means of gain. Well, then we contrast this in verse 6 through 8 with the ideal. Verse 6, godliness with contentment is a great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. What is contentment? Well, contentment, just as a definition, it just means sufficient. The term itself came from this idea of having a cup, and when the cup would get full, it would be satisfied. This idea of fullness, and this is our connection to Ruth. So if you have a cup and you fill it full of water, it's satisfied, it's content. You can't put any more water in there. It's full, it's done. And likewise, what he has this in these verses is, these are people who they're content. Their glass is full. They don't need anything else. Because he tells us here, we brought nothing into this world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. I want us to look at the Apostle Paul as a model in Philippians chapter 4. In Philippians chapter 4, Paul really exemplifies this mindset and provides for us a true model. Philippians 4, beginning in verse 10. I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at length you've received your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I've learned how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. 4:13 is one of the most famous verses of the New Testament. But what does this verse mean in context? Ultimately, I can be in any situation I need because Christ strengthens me. I can be persecuted. I can be complimented. I can be brought low. I can be brought high. I can be hit. Or I can be encouraged. Whatever situation I am, I'm going to be content. Now, brethren, does this sound a bit different? I mean, you take the person who in verses 3 through 5 and 9 through 10, who just always craves, always wants, always desires, and then the content who's satisfied. You know, I remember a few years ago, we went on a family vacation. It was my mom, dad, Jessica, my sister, one of my cousins, and my grandparents. And there was one night that we were just sitting around the condo and we were talking about what we wanted to eat. And you know, we're in Florida. We can get some fresh seafood. There's just restaurants galore. And my papa said, oh no, we have a little bit extra peanut butter. I'll just eat me a peanut butter sandwich. I'm good. And that he had no idea what the lesson he was teaching me in that moment. But I saw here all of us just our eyes agleam and our stomachs ablaze with everything that we can fill ourselves with. And then my papa, one of the best men that I know, says, I'm content with a peanut butter sandwich. And that lesson has been so true for me. Because I have learned that so often in life, I am a millennial, and I recognize the limitations of my generation. I crave. You know, I always want more. I'm never satisfied. But brethren, what I think God calls us to do is we need to be satisfied with the peanut butter sandwich. Rather than constantly longing for more, and rather than constantly craving more, and rather than constantly wanting more, just having that peanut butter sandwich, being content. Because ultimately, it does not matter what life brings at us. Do you know what the origin of the term happiness is? Happiness comes from a Latin term, which means happenings, and essentially means that the events of this life make you happy. So happiness is contingent on the happenings of this earth. So if I'm brought high, I'm happy. If I'm brought low, I'm not. If I'm encouraged, I'm happy. If I'm hit, I'm not. That's what the term happiness means. Contentment trumps happiness. Because I'm only happy if I have the full seafood platter in front of me. But I'm content whether I have a seafood platter or whether I have a peanut butter sandwich. The sandwich doesn't matter. The food doesn't matter. What matters is that I am with God. You know, in retrospect, when I look at my papa, you want to know the reason why he was really content? My papa loves to eat. And if you ever take him to Whistle Stop down in Glendale, some of y'all have been there, he will eat himself a good old helping of it. But the reason he was content in that moment was because he was with his family. And you know, he didn't need to go out to some great restaurant. He didn't need to go out and do all this fancy stuff. He could sit with his family and eat a peanut butter sandwich and be happy. And brethren, I think the lesson for us that Paul teaches in Philippians 4, God is with us. What else do I need in this life? Papaw's happy because he's with his family and he can have a peanut butter sandwich. God is with us, and I don't care what this world does to me, but I'm going to be content. So let's go back to our model. Where does satisfaction come from? Well, ultimately, it's what he says back in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Godliness with contentment is gain. What he tells us over in 3:16 is he defines godliness. Great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. He was manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up in glory. Who's he referring to? Jesus Christ. So when he says back in 6:6, godliness with contentment is gain, I think what he's really saying here in many ways is Jesus Christ is all we need. Jesus Christ is all we need. And as we look then and we contrast our two models, on the top I have the model of the world. You remember the person who uses godliness to get to gain? But for the Christian, what we crave is godliness. What we seek is godliness. Brethren, the question for us is, what do we crave? What motivates us? What do we long for? What do we work for? Do we long for gain? Do we long for material gain, worldly gain, fleshly gain? Or do we long for godliness? What do we long for? What do we crave for? What makes us content? My final question before we close is, what are the content to crave? I mean, when you have this idea of contentment is not stagnation. Contentment is not stagnant waters that gets moldy. Contentment is satisfaction. But the paradox of contentment is that we are still to crave. And what he tells us in 1 Timothy chapter 6 is, godliness with contentment is gain. Brethren, what we are to do is we are to desire and we are to long for and we are to seek godliness. And that should be what motivates us. Because he tells the young evangelist Timothy in verse 11, as for you, O man of God, flee these things, pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, gentleness. Does this sound like a man who is stagnant? Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, gentleness. This sounds like a man who is content to be with Jesus. The events and happenings of this world are not going to affect his contentment. And he is going to grow closer to God every single day of his life. Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. If you will, go ahead and get out your songbooks for me, please. As we tease out this idea of contentment, one thing I think we recognize is that contentment isn't something that comes immediately. It takes time to develop contentment. It takes time to develop a satisfaction in Jesus. And the closer that we grow to God, and the closer that we grow to Jesus, the more content that we're going to be. The closer that we grow to this world, the closer that we grow to the things of the flesh, the less happy ultimately we're going to be. Because all that we desire is gain. Brethren, what do we desire? Gain, or we desire contentment. While the gain of this life may provide for us a temporary solution and a temporary satisfaction, true contentment, true satisfaction is only found in Jesus Christ and in the gospel that he's given to us. If anyone seeks that contentment, if anyone seeks that satisfaction, seeks the salvation that comes through Jesus Christ, please come forward while we stand and while we sing.